This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whatever time of the day it is that you're listening to this, trying to take in a few clinical pharmacology pearls. This is the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm Eric Christensen, pharmacist, board certified in geriatrics and pharmacotherapy, and I'm going to try to relay some important information to you that may be advantageous in real life practice as well as for your pharmacology final or your board exam, whatever you're preparing for, it should be helpful for that as well. So today, covering a diabetes medication, GLP-1 agonist, and we're going to look at the pharmacology a little bit, mechanism of action, side effects, and drug interactions as well. So this class of drugs, so GLP-1 stands for glucagon-like peptide, and remember that an agonist is a term that stimulates something. So these GLP-1 agonists, these drugs, act similar in the body to incretin hormones. And there's some really important things that these incretin hormones do, and obviously this drug class does. They can help kind of promote fullness, which can help reduce appetite, which is a really huge deal in our type 2 diabetes patients who are potentially or maybe likely overweight. Also can kind of slow down the gastric emptying time. So again, that's kind of that leads into the fact that it promotes that fullness and a feeling of the stomach being filled up. And then it can also increase glucose-dependent secretion. So this can really blunt what are called those postprandial blood sugars. So those blood sugars after we eat, this drug can actually help stimulate that insulin secretion following a meal. So again, increases glucose-dependent insulin secretion there. And then we've got also decreases glucagon. So if you remember glucagon injection, that's kind of an emergency usually type medication used for severe hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. So if you think about that, that glucagon increases blood sugar, then obviously if we reduce it with this drug, we can kind of help stabilize or bring down those blood sugars as well. So depending, you know, upon the agent, and then, you know, it's always hard to predict 100% how these drugs are going to have an effect within the body, because there's adherence and all sorts of other variables that may impact the blood sugar lowering effect. But ballpark, you know, these drugs can drop A1C 1%, maybe up to, you know, 1.5%. So these drugs, what are they? So the big ones that I've seen in practice most often, I guess liraglutide is number one. That's the one I see most often, and that's Victoza. Another one I've seen is exenatide, which is actually twice a day, but there's also a once weekly option. There's also semaglutide, Ozempic. That's a little bit newer one. Actually, the Byetta, the exenatide, twice daily, which nobody uses now, that actually came out in 2005, kind of long before these longer once weekly or once daily acting injectables have come along too. And then there is dulaglutide, which is Trulicity, once a week. I will say that the choice of these agents does depend upon a variety of factors. Oftentimes, insurance companies will dictate, you know, what medication is chosen. Ease of administration may come into play, you know, using the injection, using the device, that may play a role. Cost, direct cost may certainly play a role, kind of along with the insurance benefit. Interestingly, we've seen some information come out on cardiovascular benefit for specific agents. And I did want to touch on that at this point. As I'm creating this podcast, liraglutide and semaglutide actually have additive effects that have been shown in studies on the heart, so cardiovascular type benefits. So again, there's kind of multiple reasons why we might choose one over the other, but just a few ideas there that I wanted to relay to you. Now, let's talk about side effects a little bit. So by far, I would say the major or the most common side effect is going to be GI upset. Nausea, potentially to the extent of vomiting, possibly some diarrhea. And if you think about this, if we're using a drug that slows down the gut and maybe makes you feel more full, you know, that kind of leads down the road of the potential for there being some adverse effects like nausea and upset stomach. So that's kind of how I remember that a little bit, tying in the mechanism along with the side effects there. There is a boxed warning for specific patients with a type of thyroid type cancer. It could contribute, I think it was right, mice or rats that they did a study and showed there was a higher risk of certain types of thyroid tumors. Don't 100% quote me on that, but there is that boxed warning on it. So what I do, if I have a patient that I know has, you know, a thyroid cancer history, or for some reason that comes up, I'm definitely going to do a little more due diligence and look at possibly avoiding this medication, or at least do more research and see, you know, if it makes sense to use this or if it's going to put them at greater risk. But thyroid tumor, thyroid cancer, if you see a patient with that, definitely remember that is a boxed warning with these medications. Rarely, I have had the question come up about pancreatitis. There is some evidence that it may be slightly associated with a higher risk of pancreatitis. So that is something to think about. If somebody's had a lot of trouble with that, you know, it may caution you to maybe look towards some of the other diabetes agents first before we look at the GLP-1s. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and then I will tackle drug interactions. If you're a pharmacist, pharmacy student, other healthcare professional looking to pick up a few clinical pearls, prepare for a board exam like NAPLEX or BCPS, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. It's a growing list of resources there. Again, for those board certification exams specifically, as well as, you know, clinical practice pearls and books and a variety of other formats there as well. It certainly helps out support this podcast and what we're trying to do to educate hundreds of thousands, millions of healthcare professionals all around the world. So meded101.com/store. With drug interactions, honestly, I don't think about too many drug interactions when I think about the GLP-1s. They're relatively clean in comparison to other agents and other drugs that have a lot more drug interactions. There are a few things I've seen in practice. The DPP-4 inhibitors, while it's, you know, not a true contraindication or anything like that, the DPP-4 inhibitors kind of work along the same pathway as the GLP-1s, so it's definitely discouraged to avoid using the DPP-4 inhibitors. So that's a drug like sitagliptin, brand name Januvia. So avoid DPP-4 inhibitors with the GLP-1 agonists in general. Alcoholics, I do think about that a little bit because they're generally at higher risk for pancreatitis. So if you add on a drug that, you know, maybe there's some risk there, it's definitely something I think about as far as a potential, you know, drug or disease type interaction. And then insulin, sulfonylurea is any insulin replacement or drug that stimulates insulin release. Feel free to go back to the sulfonylurea podcast if you want to know more about the mechanism and side effects there. But when we add on drugs that can stimulate insulin release, or again, you know, give insulin itself, we've got to be very aware that, you know, adding on another agent that's going to lower blood sugar, like the GLP-1s, can potentially run you into a situation of hypoglycemia. So just got to be very cautious about it. It's not that they can't be used together. They sometimes are. But we've got to be aware that when we add on these agents, you know, we might get that big drop in blood sugar if patients aren't used to it, or kind of as we're titrating up, we got to be careful about that. And then I always keep an eye out for drugs that can maybe counteract the effects of GLP-1 agonists. So, you know, a drug like a corticosteroid, for example. So a drug like prednisone, that type of med can significantly, and again, it's kind of a dose-dependent effect, but it can significantly raise blood sugars and really kind of counteract the effects of the GLP-1 agonist. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Check us out, reallifepharmacology.com. Snag that free 31-page PDF simply for subscribing and following the podcast. And we let you know when we've got a new podcast out as well. Share us with a friend. Leave us a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Incredibly appreciative of all the reviews that we've had. So I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening and taking part of the Real Life Pharmacology podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.